We are Association of Gay, Bi, and Trans Men. FFBC was formed in 1996 and is a 501c3 entity, making your contributions tax deductible. We would like everyone to mute their microphones to avoid any distractions in the background. And also, this meeting is recorded. While this is not only my first meeting as FFBC president, it is my first time to MC the virtual event. Jonathan formed FFBC in 1996 and nurtured it to be the wonderful organization it is today. Please join me in congratulating Jonathan on a well-deserved retirement as FFBC president and ongoing role as board member emeritus. Wish we could do that in person, but that's the best I could do. Since formation, FFBC has raised more than $400,000 for scholarships that are awarded annually to high school seniors who have done significant things to reduce homophobia and educate the LGBTQ issues in their schools and communities. $3,000 scholarships are awarded regardless of gender identity, sexual orientation, or other protected characteristics. The real strength of the scholarship program, aside from recognizing and rewarding significant and often courageous acts of recipients, is that it purchases a ticket for FFBC to send a representative to high school graduation ceremonies throughout Iowa, often in front of an audience that thinks they have never seen a real live gay person. While donations are always welcome, we make a more formal request this time of year because your donations will fund scholarships awarded this coming June. You can make one-time or recurring donations on our website, ffbciowa.org. The technology that allows more payment options is thanks to the generosity of Brad Holland, Joe Rates, and Ascendant Wealth Group. If you have not donated this year, I hope you will. On our website, you'll find access links to resources, archived monthly newsletters, and audio recordings of past speakers. We are in the process of updating our website, so some items are not being updated as timely as we would like. The new site will bring you more information and easier navigation. Thanks to David Cotton and Nicholas Williams for hosting the Zoom meeting until the day comes that we can meet in person. We would prefer our in-person meetings, and someday we'll be able to do those again in a world that will be different and it will be in keeping with best scientific and medical advice. In the meantime, we are taking the greatest possible advantage of virtual meetings by engaging speakers located geographically more distant. This month and next month, for example, we are hearing from speakers located on the East Coast. The virtual meeting format also allows others to join us who may be unable to attend in person. We hope to offer a virtual option after we resume in-person meetings. I have one announcement this morning. Iowa Safe Schools is hosting a virtual Golden Girls Trivia and Dessert Raffle on Thursday, February 18th. So I think the Golden Girls is a classic, so that could be entertaining. Go to iowasafeschools.org to sign up. The next copy of the newsletter is Monday, February 15th. If you have something you would like to share, send a copy to Jonathan Wilson or the newsletter editor, Wade Peterson, for inclusion in the newsletter. In the near future, our plan is to distribute the newsletter digitally, can't talk, which will allow a full color copy. You will be able to read it on your device or print it. We will send a monthly email with either a PDF or a link to open the file. Please make sure we have your current email address. If you're receiving monthly meeting reminders, we have your correct address. Our next board of directors meeting will be Tuesday, February 9th at 6:30 p.m. Central Time. Please let me know if you would like to participate, and I will get you the Zoom information. And now Jonathan Wilson will introduce our speaker this morning, Brian Bond.
Yes, Brian Bond joins us this morning. He is the executive director of PFLAG National. He is a former Obama administration official and an LGBTQ advocate with extensive background in constituency outreach and coalition bridge building. Brian's most recently served as the coalition's director for the Climate Action Campaign in Washington, D.C., working to protect clean air and promote action in limited climate change, to limit climate change, sorry. Prior to that, he was the deputy CEO of the 2016 Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. During the first term of the Obama administration, he was the deputy director for the White House Office for Public Engagement and primary liaison for the LGBTQ community, the first to serve in that role. After the successful reelection of Obama in 2012, he moved to the Environmental Protection Agency, and there worked on climate initiatives as Associate Administrator for Public Engagement and Environmental Education. Prior to these roles, he served as the Executive Director of the Gay and Lesbian Victor Fund, and here I can give personal testimony because Brian succeeded me as the Executive Director of the Victory Fund. I served on an interim basis and kept the organization alive, shall we say, on a survival basis, taking out of my own pocket to buy coffee and creamer and napkins and Kleenex and whatnot for the office to keep it running. He took over in 1997, served for 6 years as the executive director there, and can be legitimately credited with expanding the success of the organization and support for LGBTQ candidates during that six-year tenure. He is a Missouri native and has a degree in public administration from Missouri State University in Springfield, Missouri. He will make some informal remarks, and then he will be glad to engage in a period of Q&A, and we welcome Brian Bond for comments this morning. Brian.
Thank you, Jonathan. And first, right off the bat, I want to thank you for saying Missouri. That made me feel good. I have to correct people often in introductions on that. Hey, everybody. It's good to see you this morning. It's kind of funny. In this world of COVID, I had to check with my staff assistant. I was like, are you sure this means at 8? Because that means it's 7 for them out there. And sure enough, so I just want to thank you all for getting up so early this morning. I do want to thank Jonathan for inviting me to speak with you. And I do want to thank Jonathan for his service to the community writ large. I know he's done a lot for the First Friday Breakfast Club, but you know, Jonathan has been very engaged in the LGBTQ plus community, kind of thrown into it back in the day, and just grateful for his service to country and community. And I also want to just commend you all, the work you're doing every day. I think Jonathan and I talked a little bit about the scholarship program the other day, and I knew about the club from Jonathan years back, but to know the impact that you all have made, and not just using this, not just the scholarships, but the scholarships as a tool to educate and to inform and to bring to life who we are as individuals. So I just want to commend you for that. I think that is extremely significant. I am Brian Bond. My pronouns are he, him, and his. This is my second year this month, actually, at PFLAG, and I have to say, it's with all the jobs I've had, this is truly, at this stage of my life, it's I can't tell you how thrilled I am to be working with PFLAGers around the country. It's, as made up of some of the most fierce parents and family members and allies and LGBTQ plus folks out there. I'm pretty sure you all are fairly familiar with PFLAG, but you know, we're kind of everywhere. The chapters vary. You know, some of the, they're all volunteer based. We have over 400 chapters around the country, and you know, some of them only do support. Some of them do support and advocacy. Some do support education and advocacy. Some are pretty small. Some are large, and some are behemoths in their states. In Iowa, we have 7 chapters, and a couple of them are actually really engaged right now in the state with state legislative action. I believe there's a bill, a nasty bill around trans youth medical issues that they're engaged in. I think it's the, if I recall, it is, I'll think of it, but the 2 chapters, they're actually doing a really neat thing right now with LULAC, which is one of the largest I would say chapter or membership based Latinx organizations in the country, and they're doing a joint letter to the legislature. So the intersectional nature of the work that's being done is pretty incredible. By way of background, I am from Joplin, Missouri. I have spent a bit of time in Iowa over the years because of the caucuses. I will say, actually, when I came out, or I really wasn't even out, my first boyfriend was from Ames, if that gives me any street cred here with the Iowa crowd. I will say, when I was growing up, I was way more comfortable with my 2,000-pound steer Rufus that I showed at the fairs than I was with my peers in school. And I'm also luckier, though, than many, maybe many in this room today, and certainly luckier than a lot of people I talk to. When I was 16, I came out to my priest in a face-to-face confession in a small rural parish in Missouri, and he's an Irish priest, literally about this tall, from Ireland. Yeah, Father Fergus. And in this face-to-face confession, I said, Father, I'm going to go to hell and I'm going to lose my family. And Father Fergus's response was almost immediate. It was, you're not going to go to hell, but you're going to want to move because you're not going to be happy here. And that was the most, probably one of the most impactful, moments of my life. It did not stop my the challenges of my journey, if you will, but it did make me think. It did give me pause. It did give me a little hope, and it did lead me on a career path to advocacy, which ultimately ended up in politics. I stay in touch with Father Fergus to this day. In fact, a little irony here. I'm not trying to brag, but I guess I am bragging. So, and he said I can brag. The priest said I could brag, so it's okay. When President Obama's book came out, his memoirs a couple months ago, I get this text out of the blue from Father Fergus, and with two pages of the book. And he said, I'm so very proud of you. And I'm like, oh, first he hadn't sent the pages. And I said, what are you talking about, Father? He sent me the pages of the book where he had circled it, where President Obama talks about our engagement on Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And he cites me specifically and kind of apologizes for what I had to go through in the process. So the irony of all this time later, my Irish Catholic priest is so proud of the work I did ending up in the Obama administration. It was never, it hasn't been lost on me all these years. That being said, just a quick run through my work history. Jonathan kind of hit it all, but I have worked at the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, multiple times. That's why I've been in Iowa a few times. I did follow Jonathan at the Victory Fund, and I'm grateful. He left out that he also paid for pencils and pens, but that, you know, we were down to the point of literally counting those in our budgets at the time. Probably my proudest moment at the Victory Fund, which has benefited all of us, is the election of Tammy Baldwin, at that point to Congress, not even the thought of going into the Senate. But, you know, probably one of the most important pieces of work that Jonathan and the board of the Victory Fund did, and I believed in, was building that bench, and building those locally elected officials. A lot of folks nationally didn't care about that, but those city council members, those school board members, those mayors, those state reps, those people that can go on then to be the Tammy Baldwins. Now the LGBTQ plus caucus in Congress is huge. I mean, it's and it's getting bigger. And the best part about it, it's getting extremely diverse. I was in the Obama administration, as I mentioned, anything I can, you know, I think probably the two things the last 4 years have been the hardest for me on have seen what we did in those 8 years roll back. And I won't go into a partisan spiel here, but for me, you heard my two interests are LGBTQ plus issues and climate. And both of those, you know, science clearly didn't exist in the last 4 years. That is going to change. I did the convention because I was supposed to go to the Hillary administration the next day after the election. Well, you know, we know how that turned out. Ultimately, I ended up doing climate stuff, and then the PFLAG job came up. And I love our people, but I have to tell you, having been in the White House and the pressure and the expectations of the community, I kind of swore I would never do LGBTQ plus politics again after that experience. But PFLAG, I mean, who doesn't love PFLAG in some form? And honestly, the 50-some-year-old guy, gay white guy, I honestly had no idea how much PFLAG truly did for me across the country till I started working there. So much more than the parades. I mean, those are great, and we all know those. But the one-on-one, the time-taking support that volunteers give, doing much of the same the work that you all are doing, to advocate, to educate, and support our community. And I also saw my days in the White House. When you lift up the voice of a parent to ask for equality for their kid to their legislator, it does make a difference. You know, I mean, and or a family member. Look at Zach Walls. But yeah, you know, when you have that parent of or that family member of speaking out for, it does make a difference. So long story short, I put my name in the hat. It was a grueling process. I thought it was going to be easy, but I had to work for it. PFLAG will be 50 years old in a couple of years. And while I want to be able to look back on what PFLAG has done, so much has changed since, and I can only speak for me, but looking at this room, for many of you in this space. One of the things, kids are coming out younger now. How are we supporting those parents who are, you know, on a work track and a soccer track? More kids are coming out transgender or gender non-binary. How are we supporting those individuals? And I'll just be brutally honest, PFLAG has not done a good job or as good a job as it can in communities of color where there's a real need. And then near and dear to my heart, I refuse to give up on rural conservative America. My faith has taught me that parents should not have to choose between their kid and their God. And you know, I don't have all the answers to what that looks like yet, but those are my priorities. Interesting enough, this COVID era has, in this era of virtual meetings, is changing the dynamics of how PFLAG operates across the country as well. Somewhat starting to address some of those problems or those challenges and goals that I raised. We now over of our 400 chapters, we're paying directly for over 200 of them to do Zoom meetings and Zoom breakout meetings and the executive Zoom. And another 100 are doing different versions of their own. Yeah, I think there's a real opportunity here. I mean, I know we all want to get back in person, but you know, Jonathan, I think you're in Arizona, aren't you? So see, this allows us to communicate. One of the things in Obama land, we learned really well. It's not just about where a person lives. It's the networks they have. And through social media and virtual meetings, we're able to increase that power, that love, if you will, that energy. So we're going to be focusing a lot on that. This year, I touched on what's going on in Iowa. On the legislature briefly. This year, well, let's put it this way. Last year, there were over 200 bad LGBTQ plus bills in the states across the country. We expect there to be close to that many this year, as well as some positive bills, though, this time around. I think you're starting to see a turn in that. We are trying to focus most of our attention on the advocacy space. And I'll go straight to Congress first. And I'm going to end with Congress too when I get done here because I have an ask of you all. Because there is a somewhat progressive or a slim margin in the Senate here, there's no room for error. Let's put it that way. And like this sounds rude, but no Democratic senator can die right now. We need to keep everybody healthy for a good 2-year period here. Let's like pray for these folks. Keep them healthy. With the slim margin we have in the House and with a progressive president, we have a real opportunity to try and get the Equality Act passed. It's not going to be easy. It's going to take 60 votes to do that. And plus, candidly, probably holding Senator Manchin. So we've got a lot of work ahead of us. That's where I plan to engage PFLAG parents, PFLAG siblings, PFLAG relatives in this fight to advocate for the LGBTQ plus community. I think you've seen some of the actions already from the current administration. Within the first, couple of weeks, BOSTUC will be implemented across the federal agency, which, as you know, prohibits sexual discrimination based on gender identity and sexual orientation. Just yesterday, the president announced, if you will, put the rainbow flag back in the ground in our embassies, for our State Department and our Foreign Service to actually speak out and be a voice for LGBTQ plus equality. And then on the visible side, hopefully you all saw Pete Buttigieg get sworn in as the first Senate confirmed cabinet member. I will say, I don't have the exact stats yet, but Jonathan knows this is something we cared about and do care about still at the Victory Fund, is the number of appointments. The percentage of LGBTQ plus appointments this early in the game is a higher percentage than it was during the Obama administration, and it is extremely more diverse. For me, kids and parents seeing that their kids have opportunities is huge. And that's where I think we are. Now, there's a lot of other stuff that this administration is going to have to focus on, and we're going to have to push them on. Obviously, the president is rolling back the transmilitary ban, which is so stupid. Having worked on Don't Ask, Don't Tell, I can tell you, when Trump decided to do this, I think you know this. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. He didn't even talk to the generals about this. He didn't talk to the leadership at the Department of Defense. This was a disruption to unit cohesiveness that did not need to happen. It was a stunt. It was a political ploy. But it's going to be rolled back. With that, we have a lot of work to do from the advocacy side of ensuring that the administration moves forward on fixing what was taken away and making it better at the Department of Education, especially around the protection of LGBTQ plus youth. We need to make sure in everything that's being done on COVID that data is being collected on LGBTQ plus individuals. Data is probably one of the most missing links for our community when it comes to federal funding, state funding, access to, whatever you want to call it. I am pretty confident, but we will continue to reinforce this, the importance of LGBTQ plus data collection for this administration across the board, not just COVID impacts, but also healthcare writ large. So this is going to be some of the big priorities that we on the national front will be engaging our members on. And then also, I think we have a chance while we're working with Trevor and other groups around conversion therapy, mostly city by city, state by state. I think we do have an opportunity here to get some type of national legislation. One caveat I'd like to give when you hear folks talk about conversion therapy. For me, and I think for my members, this is a two-part thing. Yes, we need laws that ban conversion therapy, but churches with religious exemptions are still going to be able to do so, right? So what we need to be able to do is to win the narrative. Use these legislative city council fights, whatever, around conversion therapy to win the narrative of why conversion therapy is bad and why we are okay as LGBTQ plus individuals. Once we do that, the issue will then have to move into the pulpits. And the only way you're going to change the pulpit is by impacting the pews. And having individuals in the pews say to their pastor, their rabbi, their imam, their priest, whoever, say, why do we have to do this? Why are we doing this? That's kind of the second stage of the whole conversion therapy fight, if you will, that a lot of people don't talk about, but we need to have a discussion on. So, sorry, I feel like I'm rambling a bit. I just want to close with a couple of things. There's a couple of studies out, about where LGBTQ plus people are. Surprise, surprise, queers are everywhere. The MAP studies, the other studies that have been done, 3.5 to 4.5% of people surveyed in rural areas are LGBTQ plus. 10% of LGBTQ plus youth are in rural areas. I made an effort in my first year of PFLAG. I haven't been able to travel in my second year of PFLAG very much at all. But I didn't go to PFLAG chapters in New York and LA and San Francisco and places like that. They don't need me. I went to Springfield, Missouri. I try to go to the Midwest, to the South, to the quote flyover areas where, because I'm not that big a deal, but if I can go tell 10 or 15, 20 parents at a volunteer meeting that they're doing great stuff, then that's important to them. And that's where we need to have our focus. So with that being said, you're going to see a lot of stuff over the next several months about the Equality Act. I'm not going to lie to you. It's going to be hard to get to 60 votes. Really hard. But this is probably our best chance to do it. And so everything you do, when I talk about the narrative, when you're giving out the scholarships and you're talking about what that means, that's changing narrative. That's crucial. You all can play a role in what happens with the Equality Act. I know your senators are kind of interesting, but you know what? They need to be worked on too. They need to see, at what side of history will people ultimately be on here? The Equality Act will clarify and codify the Bostock decision. It will expand and add protections that do not exist. It will reinforce the Civil Rights Act of 1964. This is literally our moment to do this. To do this, we have to win the narrative. Ultimately, to do this, we have to get to 60. I can promise you from my part, we will be using PFLAG parents and family and allies and LGBTQ plus people to have one-on-one conversations. We're already doing it in several key states right now. We are in North Carolina talking to both Republican senators. We're in Ohio trying to get Portman, who has a queer son, to come out for this, especially since he's not running again. So we're in Texas. Yeah, trying to talk, probably not to Cruz, but hey, we got to try. But we're doing this work, but you can too. You have connections. You have relationships. So what's going to happen is it's probably going to be introduced in the House, probably the last part of February. And it looks like it will sail through the House, probably without a hearing, any of that, because it was already passed by the House last time. So then it will move to the Senate. Likely not going to be taken. Schumer is committed to this and the leader, Democratic leadership, but it's likely not going to come up at this point till April, maybe May. The reason being, it falls under judicial jurisdiction, so they've got to staff up and do the appointments around the Department of Justice, all the U.S. attorneys. There's impeachment stuff going on right now, and there's multiple immigration will go through that committee. So there's multiple priorities that will go through that committee. Ultimately, though, it will come up. And I would ask of you, what contacts do you have with the senators? How can you start reaching out in a positive way? If I need to get you talking points, we'll get you the talking points. But, you having a conversation with the senator's staff, even at the end of the day, if it's for them to tone down their rhetoric when the debate happens, that's a win. Even if they don't vote for it, if they tone down their rhetoric. But what side of history are they going to be on? Now, we probably know the answer to this, but that's okay. Put the pressure on. It's important to do. So that's one. Two, I need us all to be mindful that we're in this as a community, even though, you know, how do I say this? So last year, 2020, over 44 transgender, gender non-binary people of color, mostly black women, were killed. I can promise you, if I was killed or on the street, shot, stabbed, whatever, or two or three gay white men were killed or stabbed on the street, it would be the front page of the papers. It would be everywhere. It would be a big deal. These are us too. We are them. What, it doesn't, it's not too hard a leap to go from a transgender woman killing a transgender woman to vilifying killing LGBTQ plus writ large. We owe it to this part of our community to be a voice for them. And so I hope you'll keep that, and you may be doing that, but I just feel it's important for me to share. It's already, I think, we're just barely into February. I think it's three or four already have been killed. And I'm not trying to end on a down note, but it's just important that we realize why we're doing the work we're doing and why the work you do is so important. I think I've babbled probably long enough here, Jonathan. Happy to answer any questions anyone have. Again, I'm truly grateful for everything you all do, and thank you.
Well, before we go to the Q&A, you can, number one, be thinking up questions that you would like to pose for Brian and tap into his wealth of experience. But unbeknownst to most of you, I suspect, is if you were to go to our and not known by Brian for that matter, if you were to go to the chat screen, you will find that David Cotton, bless his heart, has been posting links to the various things that Brian was mentioning as he went along. So if you want a link to LULAC, if you want a link to the Iowa Safe Schools, if you want a link to the Equality Act, those popped up as we've been going along, and you need to tap into that resource if I make you aware of it. And now, are there those who have questions? I guess I have one for you, Brian. This is sort of a
Jonathan.
Question. And then I'll come back to you, Rick Miller. I'm interested, given all your experience in coalition building and bridge building and outreach and education, what are going to be the key things for reaching into the evangelical contingent and the, well, the churches generally contingent? How do we get into those people who have an ideological mindset that is anti-LGBT and are out raising money, profiting, benefiting from their LGBT, anti-LGBT attitudes? Do you have some insights on that?
So that's a really good question, Jonathan, and I don't know I have any one particular answer to it. A lot of groups, a lot of the LGBTQ plus groups and national groups and progressive groups focus on this. It's something we're going to dive into more this year as part of our strategic plan. I think there's multiple layers here. I know this is an easy word for me to throw out, but you know, winning that narrative in the pews is I think more important than the pulpit at first, because what a lot of faith leaders respond to is economics as well, and or the loss of membership. And or corporations or individual or companies that walk away. And that's a hard one. You know, like faith is a very real thing for people, for many people. And what we have started seeing happen is, we've had I see this every day. A kid comes out. They talk to their priest or their preacher, and that preacher or priest is not supportive. They try to hang in there, but then they end up walking away. and sometimes from faith completely, sometimes to a UCC church or an affirming Methodist church or other Protestant churches. But this is going to take a lot of work, and the problem is, and one of the things that I think the groups need to come together, and figure this out. Now, I know one of your previous speakers was, she works very closely, with Mitchell Gold, and they are doing a pressure campaign on the Southern Baptist Convention specifically, at the preachers, with a letter writing campaign. I think my only challenge with that is, which is just hard work, is those letters need to come from the parishioners in that congregation, right? It's so it's, we are starting to find in some of our smaller, because a lot of our chapters, over 200 of them, are in suburbia or rural. They are trying to have those one-on-one conversations with their pastors. And even if they can't get to that, a theological agreement on something, trying to at least get the rhetoric toned down, as a first step. That's not the answer by any means. And I don't honestly know what the answer is completely, Jonathan, on this yet, but it is something we're going to focus on a lot over the next couple of years.
Thank you.
And it's, as you know, it's that you have the evangelical space, predominantly white, that I'm talking about. Then you have the black church too, which is a different discussion. And who am I as a white cisgender guy to impact that? Right. So that's why it's incredibly important. We build, relationships across communities to have these conversations.
Great. Byron, I'll turn it back over to you to select people who have questions. I think maybe Rick Miller was raising his hand, but it's up to you.
Rick, while we're waiting, I have just an observation that Mr. Bond mentioned, and that was that data is important. So often, you know, we see people trying to keep us from getting data. If you remember, in regards to the census, they didn't want any questions in regards to gay households. And I once attended a conference in regards to healthcare, and the speaker said, "If there's no data, it doesn't matter." And that is, you know, that statement just really struck me and has stuck in my mind. If we don't have the data, it doesn't matter. And I think that's an important observation that we need to maintain data. And when we notice people are doing little things trying to remove us from getting data, they are trying to frustrate our efforts.
Gary, that's a really important point, which is why I raised it. It's like in the Obama days, the next census was coming out, so we could only impact so much. So we impacted the I think it's called the American Community Survey. I can't remember what it now. I'm getting old. I can't remember the name of it, but it's the one that's done with segments of the population every year. You know, getting those questions in there, household questions, things like that. When the Trump administration came along, they were just wiped out. You know, and it takes time to get the, you know, these, I'm not a scientist. I don't try to play one. And I'm not a data person, but you know, to get the right question takes a couple of years too, right? It takes a few years to get the right questions so that people will actually answer them. So even though the Biden administration is likely going to move ahead, full speed ahead, you know, it will take a couple of years for that to evolve into a full, you know, deck of data that we need. But that is, you don't get funding without data. And especially in the HIV/AIDS world, people know that. And in the transgender space, you know, because data didn't exist, NCTE here had to do its own survey to provide to the government. This is what the transgender community is facing. And so this is a crucial money piece for us.
Okay. Rick, did you have a question? You need to unmute your mic.
You need to unmute your mic, Rick.
Okay. I thought I'd done that, but it went back on. Brian, so good to have you here. I am on the board of the Pride Center here in Des Moines, and I hope that you would know that our current president is actually a trans black woman, and we are so pleased to have her in charge of that. And there are actually some of the top leading LGBTQ organizations in the city now are all being run by women. And so we're very excited about that change in our community too. So know that clear out here in the old sticks, there are things that are quite progressively happening. And I just wanted you to know that. Of course, our legislature is trying to make sure that conversion therapy is considered an appropriate thing to do for parents. And that is a big issue here, I think, with our legislature. They have tried in the past to get something done and they have failed, but they're going to continue. They have more Republicans now than ever before in our legislature, in our governor's position, and appointed Supreme Court justices. Matter of fact, that's one of the big things they're trying to do. They think the justices in our Supreme Court, even though appointed by Republicans, are way too liberal. And they're trying to undo everything from abortion rights to many other things. So my question for you is PEAC in any way an international organization? And is there such a thing as that on any level? And are you familiar with Moms for Gay Rights, which is an evangelical group of women that are supporting their gay children?
Thank you, Rick. To your first question, we do not have an international component, but we do. I mean, it's not even a loose federation, but you know, we do provide materials and support that can be adapted in individual countries or languages as needed. In fact, the end of last year, amazing mom in Uganda, had reached out and we worked with her to figure out which of our publications made sense. And she literally herself then translated them into a couple of the regional dialects that were necessary to make that work. I will say I was literally on the phone yesterday with Mark Bromley. Name may be familiar with some of you, may not. He is the head of the, global equality, LGBTQ, basically embassy work around the country. And we, as part of our strategic plan, one of the conversations, Rick, is how do we actually formalize this to actually be more helpful? And I see a huge win. Honestly, for me, I see a huge win in Central and South America and Asia probably first, like Central South America first, because so many of the Latinx immigrants in this country have relationships back home, you know, their first and second generation, and they're sharing information that they're getting it. Like I know specifically in our LA PFLAG meetings, two of which are Latinx, information is flowing back to Central and South America from those meetings. So to your point, we do need to kind of codify that, whether it's like some kind of a Pride Center kind of approach, configuration, but we're looking into that. And yes, I have heard of the Moms for Gay Rights. I don't think we've done a lot of work with them yet, but as mentioned earlier, as we go into the more the faith space, to try to be helpful, those kinds of relationships are going to be hugely important. You know, in Utah, there is a whole group of moms that aren't associated with us that are Mormon. And so that's, you know, like how do we our chapters there have supported them, but at the end of the day, as a branded mom Mormon organization, they are more powerful going to talk to the church leadership there than PFLAGers who are probably mostly not Mormon in Utah and or are former Mormons.
Thank you.
Okay, we have two questions. John Schmacher, unmute your mic.
Oh. Yep. Thank you, Brian. Welcome to virtual Iowa, Brian. I wish we could share our virtual outdoor temperature with you right now, but that doesn't work.
No, thank you.
I'm wondering, I'm wondering if you're developing some strategies for outreach to the people of color in our community. I noticed just this morning, it appears that you're talking to 30 some men who consider themselves to be white. and we've known for a long time that people of color in the gay and lesbian community are, how shall I say, underreached, under-resourced. And I wonder if you're developing some strategies for that those communities. Thanks.
Sure. No, thanks for the question, John. And no, you can keep the weather, please. I'm happy to come to Iowa in the summer, anytime or fall. So we are actually, when I took the job, and again, just being very honest, I told the board that PFLAG is made up of the most amazing, wonderful, loving people in the world, but it's pretty white. And so we have started, we got some grant money from some of our chapters in interesting places too. Not like one is in El Paso, which is doing a lot of work in the Latinx space, but that's El Paso. It's not, but, it's Omaha is doing some great things in this space. And there's a couple of other chapters in the Midwest and the West as well that are doing some great things around inclusion work. Part of it, and I know you've heard these words, but they really do need to be, and we do trainings on this as well, you know, on unconscious bias. Honestly, half the battle is showing up, but not showing up as, oh, I'm here to help you. It's, how can I help you? Do you need my help? Do you want my help? You know, like, coming humbly to a conversation with, is there a way I can be of help? Do you need my help? What would that look like? So part of the modeling around this, John, is really about unconscious bias, about listening, and about coming back. And I will be 14 years sober in June. You know, it is about coming back. You know, it is about being there. It is about being present. It is about not necessarily being the voice in the room. When I will say, in leading by example, when I started at PFLAG 8 months in, this last year, obviously, there was a lot of discussion around inequality and inequities in this world, and a lot of as we saw, our Black brothers and sisters getting shot and killed. And everybody's like, oh gosh, what can I do? I want to be more supportive. You know, that's not the way it kind of works. From part of this is economics. Like I said, 8 months ago, I moved some of our reserves into a Black-owned bank in DC. I basically set a standard with our staff of every time we do an RFP, or we're hiring a vendor for something, is it a person of color? Is it a woman? Is it trans-owned? Is it LGBTQ plus-owned? You know, like, I mean, those are the kinds of questions internally we need to do as organizations too. And like, we can't just go out and fix things for people. We have to know what people want and then support. We have to listen and be there for them and continue to come back. And but at the end of the day, part of this is about showing up. Part of this is about listening, but it is also economics. You know, where can you have that impact, to make change and create change? It's going to take time, John. I'm heartened by what Rick was saying about the visibility because, you know, and Jonathan knows this from Victory Fund days, you know, that seat at the table makes all the difference in the world. And when people see themselves at the table, you know, my biggest challenge in the space you're talking about, John, is a mom, person of color. Is she going to come to the St. Paul's Episcopal Church at 6 p.m. on Thursday? Does she have the time to do that? Is she going to walk into a room and see a room that looks like her and represents her and feel welcome? You know, that's why Zoom is actually kind of helping us a little bit. It's allowing people to peek in and see, okay, well, maybe this is okay for me. Again, I'm not, probably not answering your question, but we're modeling that right now, trying to figure out how, at least for us, what will work best to broaden our reach. That was a
lot. Are there any more questions? Oh, Gary has another question.
I always have a comment someplace, you know that. One of the things I was thinking about as you spoke was an experience I had at the Governor's Conference for LGBT Youth. Rick was there with me that day. And we had a young mother that came in and stopped by our booth. And she said, you know, I said, are you a teacher here or, you know, one of the other people? She says, no, I'm a mother. She says, I have a very young child that I think might possibly be gay later. And I just want to inform myself as much as I can about the resources that'll be available for him later on. And I was, it brought tears to my eyes to think that here is a young mother trying to plan or educate herself in case she should have a gay child. I think back to my childhood, that information would not even have been available. And so I guess when I think about our program for PFLAG, I think, we have a lot of educational courses for new parents. And, at some point when we can be a part of that, of just honing in on parents saying, be sensitive. A mother knows her child better than anybody else and probably recognizes their tendencies of being gay and how to accept that at a very young age and doesn't even realize it. I think that's an important part of nurturing new parents is how to, you know, expect for the unexpected at times with your children. I just wanted to point that out, that there is progress being made with young parents that are preparing themselves for gay youth.
Thank you, Gary. Neil Solowitz, I saw, raise his hand, but I think he must have had to go off. I don't see him in the... Anyone else? David Cotton.
Morning, and thank you. You talked about changing the narrative. Some of us need a kickstart and maybe some tools to do that, to know how to do that. I was going on the web here, found your site about your one pagers. Is that a good place to start to understand how to engage and some themes and how to frame that perspective?
So are you talking specifically around the Equality Act or writ large?
Writ large, when you've got something that you want to get your toolkit better because it's not your natural tendency.
Yeah. That would be – the website is obviously a good resource. And then we will be the language around the Equality Act specifically is changing. There's going to be a few – besides just the fact that, oh, I'm not voting for anything gay, you know, whatever kind of stuff – There will be some other components of it that are going to be challenging that literally I was on a call yesterday with all the LGBT groups trying to figure out what's the polling say? How are we going to messages? Cause, you know, the bad people, hell, I just saw that Pence just joined on staff at the Heritage Foundation, speaking of, it kind of tells you, by the way, sorry, I have to make one little dig. The fact that a former vice president has to go to something like the Heritage Foundation, for a job, that doesn't say a lot for his abilities, but that's a little dig. I'll just leave to myself. But there is you're going to see some tweaking of some language that's going to need to be done over the next few weeks. So keep an eye on it. Those of you that are on HRC's list or our list or the task force list, and I'll flag it to Jonathan too. When it comes out, those will be important to try, because some of these will be putting a camel through a needle's eye, honestly. So just stay posted. But talking to your senators, you know, and Rick will, I think Rick will probably have that information by the time this through the, through Rick, are you involved with CenterLink? No? I'm mute, Rick.
You're still on mute, Rick.
But whatever you said was really good.
Thank you. I'll make it a priority to get to CenterLink. I'm not on CenterLink.
Okay. All right. Cool.
Anyone else? We have just another couple minutes, maybe. Jonathan.
I just wanted to make a comment about how important PFLAG is to this whole cause of reaching into the majority and changing hearts and minds. Because if in the back in the 1960s, a black child was discriminated against and called home to tell about it, they would be talking to someone just as black as they and just as familiar with the discrimination and relatively powerless to do anything about it. But when a gay kid comes out to parents, they bring allies. They bring blood ties into the majority with moms and dads and brothers and sisters and aunts and uncles and friends and relations. And that is a really powerful connection piece into the majority that the black community has not had the advantage of over the course of their struggle.
The one thing I'd add on that, Jonathan, that most people don't know about PFLAG, besides our 400 chapters. And I will say, just for awareness, the Des Moines chapter, the six other chapters in Iowa are pretty active. I believe the Des Moines chapter is going through some restructuring right now, which happens in a volunteer organization, and that's okay. But we also, through our Straight for Equality work, if you check our website, we do learning and inclusion trainings in most of the major companies in the country. We do, for instance, Verizon, we are already scheduled for two sets of trainings with their employees a month through all of 2021. We actually are the people, and this is where I will brag, we started the conversations with Walmart 10 years ago to be more inclusive. Our trainers had to go in as a non-branded training force the first couple of years because that's the way Bentonville wanted it. Now, the LGBTQ plus ERG at Walmart is one of the biggest. People don't know we do that, but to your point, Jonathan, the allies is as crucial as the LGBT plus component of this. And those are trainings we do year round in corporate space because corporations will matter to these senators when it comes time to vote on the Equality Act.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you. I think we're about out of time. So I want to thank you, Brian, for joining us this morning. And your advocacy is commendable. And the recognition by former President Obama is well-deserved. PFLAG does amazing work to help parents and their LGBTQ plus children. Your role as executive director is a perfect fit. It amazes me that people care so much about how another person wishes to live when it has no impact on them personally. By educating the religious community why conversion therapy does not work and harms our children, we will win the attack on all LGBTQ plus individuals. The Equality Act will be a game changer for our community. Everyone can make a difference by speaking up and use our connections to influence Congress. Again, David Cotton has posted a link to HRC's website that gives you more information about the Equality Act, and there's also a link to PFLAG's advocacy page. Before you end the call, and I just learned this, you can save the chat so you would have all of that, all those links, by hitting the small box with three dots in the section where you can post comments, and it should save it to your computer. Maybe that is a little bit more technical than some people can manage, but it did work. Upcoming speaker, March 5th next month, we will have another virtual meeting. That'll be Dr. Ginger Campbell, who hosts podcasts, including Graying Rainbows, Coming Out Later in Life, and Brain Science. If you like the FFBC Facebook page, you will see meeting speaker event announcements. But please note that this is not an RSVP for the meeting. You will need to the invitation from SignUp Genius that gets emailed. Our meeting is now adjourned, but please remember Iowa Safe Schools Golden Girls Trivia on the 18th. If some people would like to stay on and chat, it kind of gives us a replicate or in-person meeting experience of talking to each other. So you're welcome to stay on. And thank you very much, everyone. Have a great weekend.